against my gestalt. I may use that word. Josh, the only problem is you come to my Monday class. Sunday, you got to see if I know anything. Monday only tells you I know I can play games and tell jokes. Sunday tells you if I know. No, okay, Sunday's class was more than grad school yesterday. What I did with Chochmat Yisrael, okay. All right, today is Monday, October 15th, 2012. And I want to welcome everyone listening and everyone listening across the wide expanse of the Jewish communities around the world. I just want to begin. Yesterday I reacted to a halachic question. Today I want to react to a hashkafic question that a number of people sent emails and asked me. And it seems as follows. This is the background. When the Rav died, they had at the Shloshim every night a different Rosh Yeshiva spoke in YU and described the Rav. And Rabbi Abba Braunschweigel made a speech in which he claimed that he never saw the Rav holding a secular book. And that speech caused an explosion, and Rabbi Lamb was very upset, as I recall. And now it seems Rav Lichtenstein wrote some article or spoke about them, and also said that in later years he was mainly into learning, and Rabbi Gil Stuten picked it up and tried to show that perhaps Rabbi Braunschweigel was not entirely wrong. So everyone wants to know my opinion, and in this topic I want to tell you it's not my opinion. What I'm telling you is absolute fact. And I discussed this with my own mouth and with my own ears with the Rav in 78. And if I thought the Rav was playing to the audience, a year later, the late lamented, my chaver, Rabbi Aaron Bat, visited the Rav in Boston, and the Rav told him exactly the same thing. My dear students, the Rav was a Litvak, was a Litvisher. Maybe I'll get a chance to talk about this at YU, at Kol El Yom Rishon. I'm sending them topics. It's unbelievable when you have to deal with people 10,000 miles away, even with all the modern techniques and email and faxes and telephones. Sehelfnisht. The Rav was a Litvak. He believed that with Torah learning we could conquer the world, we could have good Jews, and everything began and ended with the Daf Gemara. However, the Rav reached out to the Western world with two hands. He never stopped reaching out. And the Rav always successfully managed the two worlds. I said already 1,000 times, I'll say 1,001 now, Ger v'tosha v'anochi imachem, we are gerim in this world, we are different than non-Jews. We are also toshavim, because we too have to win Nobel Prizes for advances in medicine, and in biology and chemistry, because that helps the general human existence. And anyone who doesn't think that the Rav didn't have a wide knowledge of general philosophy and literature, just look at his publications. And Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein has said this, Professor Tversky has said this, it's Zil Kri Bei Ravu. Yitzchak can testify, and I can testify, you could ask the Rav a question on any topic whatsoever, any part of Shas and Paiskim, and any part of general life, and the Rav would give you an answer. It could be chemistry, it could be biology, it could be mathematics. All right, how do these people know so much? These are geniuses. These are not people like us that we struggle to know a few Daf Gemara. But there's another factor to life. You grow older. And what is true, that in the 70s, the Rav no longer taught beyond Shas v'Paiskim. And the shift to the right was already beginning. And the Rav couldn't control it. A Talmud sitting in front of me told me his cousin, his uncle, whatever the relationship is, Duvi Hartman said, the Rav is at fault that why you ain't Haredi. He could have stopped it. Baloney, he could have stopped it. These were factors. The Rav was upset by it. He spoke to me. Spoke Tarim Bat. Read, study my second volume, The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, I quote Rebbe word by word, see what he has to say. And people didn't believe the quote is correct. They went to the tape. Boy, did they come crawling on all four, bowing humbly to a guy named Rakefe. Wow, you quoted him syllable by syllable. But you see, now I want to tell you one little story that says it all. When the Rav took ill and the downhill slide begins, you have to give his son, my classmate, his only son, Dr. Grach, a Gaon Reb Chaim, who lives on Rehov Neely, part of the year there, part of the year in Riverdale. Dr. Grach went back to America to help take care of his father. And you got to give him all the credit. And Dr. Grach, who has never made his peace with the real world, this is, if the Rav was a genius, Dr. Grach is the genius of geniuses. He never could make his peace with the real world. Whatever, you all know his life story, I don't have to elaborate. And he said to his father, in front of the Gabayim, and that's how I know the story, the Gabayim were my Talmidim, he said, Tata, look at your students. This is not Yiddishkeit. Everyone's black hats. Think the same. Act the same. This is not you. It's your fault, he said to his father. Why don't you give Shayurim like you gave in the 50s in Bernard Rebel on Jewish philosophy, on prayer, on man? Those shayurim, look at the emergence of ethical man. If you understand it, I owe you a bottle of soda. You got it, Yitzchak?
It's not so much
that. Please, it wasn't finished. But you got a horror of it. You understand? You can't just read that like you read Washington. Okay, please, don't put that in the same category with Washington. Don't denigrate the Rav and don't disgrace Washington. Zelichud v'zelichud. Baruch Hashem. Yaakov, you know what the Rav answered him, and this is what Chaim can't understand. Chaim, he said, Yichob nishkein koyach. By the way, the Rav spoke Yiddish to his children. Chaim ke. You know what that means? I don't have energy. And that's what you have to understand. And that's where Rabbi Braunschweigel is wrong and Rabbi Student is wrong. It's not the Rav, of course, in the later years, his whole thrust was to prepare for the Shayurim. What took him one day in the 50s took him 2 days in the 60s and 3 days in the 70s. And when you grow older, I got to tell you about the Rav. I can tell you from my own experience. I went to sleep 12 o'clock at night. I had a dear friend, a Gona dear, Rabbi Dr. Professor Tzvi Groner, make believe you heard the name, so the ignorant pass for the wise. And I would call him 11:30. We'd start talking over what happened. We'd argue, you understand? Sam, we would argue. He was a leftist, I'm a rightist. But at the end of the day, halacha went out. Then I started going to sleep 11 o'clock, 10:30. Today, by 10 o'clock, you can't even reach me. I'm totally out of it. All right. I don't want to say chabnishkan koach anymore. Dela kadosh baruch hu koach I have. But it's limited, you grow older. So that's my comment to all those who ask me, and I stand on every syllable of what I have to say. What do you say, Danny? I can't hear? Yeah, I have that in the book, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. His words to Rav Amital are classic. He says to Rav Amital, you see the way the students revere me? If I woke them up at 2 o'clock in the morning, I can thank for a Shvera Rambam. I can, look, learn Yiddish or forget it. If you don't know Yiddish, you can't study Torah. Period. It's lost. Only the Sfadik boys have my permission not to know Yiddish. If you're not from the Eidot HaMizrach, please. And in my time, the Sfadik boys all knew Yiddish. My classmate was Leon Katzin, Leon Kassim, the son of the chief rabbi, the brother of the present chief rabbi. My classmate, gerät ihr dich wie alle mir, hat gesitzen, famori und Rebbe und gelernt wie ein Ashkenazi Bacha. Es ist nicht gewesen, Breda. You didn't have a choice. Rabbi Peretz, one of the founders of Shas, speaks Yiddish better than I do. He learned in Panovich. Yeah, go up the block here, you'll see, and the Svada Yeshiva, the Yeshiva there, perfect Yiddish. He learned in Panovich, sink or swim. As I had a master Yiddish, they had a master Yiddish. Where was I? Oh, so he says to Avamital, 2 a.m. in the morning, if I have a Shvera Rambam to explain, the boys will all wake up and listen. My hashkafas, they run away from me like from the fire. I'm too modern, I'm too secular, and this is the reality. Now, 50 years later, unfortunately, we have a counter-reaction. And today already, you see, YU graduates, a member of the YU Kollel, I got calls from Toronto. I get blamed for everything. What do I have to do with the Kollel in Toronto? Have mercy on me. I get blamed, Yoni. I get a call. A guy in the YU Kollel gets up in public in Toronto and gives a big Devar Torah speech, Shayur, that women are allowed to have an aliyah. Boy, oh boy. Who staffs Chovevei Torah? And under the new administration, Rabbi Lopatin, he's a graduate of the Kollel, is taking over. Women are listed on the faculty, women rabbis. Reformed, conservative, all right. They said they're teaching pastoral psychology. By I live in a world, my grandson is an expert on dinosaurs. Yadid, you are looking at a dinosaur. But at least I'm a good show, and now let me teach. Gentlemen, let's roll. Isaac Lisa. Wow. What a sad story. What did I tell you 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago already? How cold to leave a muzzle? You have to have muzzle in life. I've seen the wrong people at the right place. Unbelievable. I've seen the right people in the wrong place. Their lives are ruined. Nebuchadnezzar. He was the right person in the right place, the wrong time. Came to America. His years paralleled the 19th century or the first half of it, 1806, 1868. Wasn't a great Talmud Chacham, but in his youth in Germany, he learned, he knew how to learn a Daf Gemara. He didn't need a Schottenstein. He was solid. And he was a businessman with his uncle. He went into the rabbinate. They drew him in, became a chazan, Sfadik synagogue, then his own synagogue. And everything he dreamt about, if only we could teach the people, they would stop assimilating. They would be good Jews. Spoke about the lack of decorum in an Orthodox synagogue. Dignify the service. Reach out to women. Without women, we have no future. Gentlemen, women comprise 52% of the population of the world. Women make a home. It's not 52%, but I would say 90%. When you're busy, you're running, you're accomplishing, you want to conquer the world, the woman is chava ein kol chai. It's the most glorious part of God's creation. Reach out to women. He was preaching English. Shmuel, you look preaching English. That was the Reform movement, but not everything in the Reform movement was bad. Decorum in a synagogue, preaching in English, making the davening a little bit shorter. No, how did you celebrate the Simchas Torah, you guys? When did you start davening? 8 o'clock, 8:15, you finished 2 o'clock? Oh boy, Rakefet? My family made a 6 o'clock minyan. We finished 8:15. My grandson made a siyum. We had kiddush. It's fabulous. I went home, I learned 2 daf gemara with all rishonim, Rashi, Tosfos, Rambam, etc. To me, that's Simchas Torah. All right. I'm not telling you kiblu et dati. But boy, if I had to sit in shul on Simchas Torah from 8 o'clock in the morning to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I would blow my brains out. It's Nisht Yom Kippur. What?
We're not sitting.
Yoni, you're a chassid. You're entitled to your point of view. You know that. I had a student yesterday with payas. I said, keep the payas on. If you remain in Israel, keep the... If he's going to go into the rabbinate, you're going to have a problem. But it could be. Could be not. Certain. It depends where. My last student with payas who went into the rabbinate cut them off pretty quickly and became an expert in golf. You understand? What are you laughing at? I'm telling it as it is. I hope he's listening. He's from, he's a Talmud Chacham, he's a Yerei Shemayim, he's done wonders, but he is an expert in golf.
What's wrong?
No, I'm an expert in baseball. He plays golf. I'm an expert in baseball. I looked at what the hell the Yankees did last night for 2 minutes this morning, slammed the TV off, and I have to bow to a gentleman who was born and raised in Detroit, Yaakov. But he plays golf with his balabatim. That's an entire Sunday morning. It could be a big amaretz when you play.
It's called
Kiruv. Rabbi Reuben is balametzchot. Gentlemen, a rabbinic school in America. Maimonides College. Ugh, what ideas he had. But he had no mazel. And above all, and I want to pick off what I ended off last time in this beautiful biography, and again, no one has come up with something more critical or a larger piece of work, a master's, a doctorate. I'm sure something was done in Isaac Lisa.
One second.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you?
A guy called Sussman.
Right.
He was in college. He wrote a doctor on Isaac Lisa. And Wayne University Press published it.
And is the book available?
Yeah.
Interesting. I would love to see it. Okay. Give me the information after class. I'll follow through. But the Nancy Klein, who wrote this beautiful biography, at the end of the biography, she says, even in death, he didn't succeed. And she quotes the Jewish Encyclopedia, the Universal Encyclopedia, and they both cast them into a semi-conservative position.
See, now the thing is, instead of Gulag pushing somebody...
Yeah, I understand. Forget. Okay. Bernard Drebbel in American Jewish History, for whatever the reasons are, is a non-starter today.
The name of the book is The Protestantization of American Jews.
Oh my gosh, the Protestantization. Okay, let it stand over until we see it. No one did more to create the conservative world for Isaac Lisa than Moshe Davis. Now, let me just give a drop of historical background. In the United States in the 1800s, there was Reform Judaism and there was Orthodox Judaism. There was nothing in the middle. Now, it is true that some of the Reform Judaism was not as extreme as Reform Judaism is today. And that was the world in which Isaac Lisa functioned. The seminary, and I think I explained this last time, but I'll repeat it very quickly, the seminary, which was founded in 1887, had a tremendous problem. They had to show that they're based upon the past, especially when they moved away from orthodoxy officially after 1917. The word conservative Judaism was not utilized till about 1917. Then it became a formal concept. And conservative Judaism attempted to show that it had its roots in what they called the historical school in the Enlightenment. Now, the historical school was basically based upon Germany, Central Europe, somewhat Hungary. You could find traces of it in what later became Czechoslovakia, Romania, but the historical school essentially, and this was the touchstone of the difference, was in relation to Torah Shabbat Peh. How do we view Torah Shabbat Peh? We review it as a dynamic process, not a historical process. The greatest example is Ayin Tachat Ayin. A Torah Jew views ayin tachat ayin, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, he said ayin tachat ayin. When he explained it, the Bechinat Torah Sheba'al Peh, he explained that it meant momen tachat ayin. The conservative movement will take the approach, and this is Achara Am's famous essay that I alluded to. It is a classic center-of-the-road conservative essay, although Haram himself was not a conservative Jew, but he was part of this historical movement that originally was Hayim Tachatayim. You took a person's eye out, but because this was primitive, hundreds of years later you felt, gee, it's not nice to take an eye out, so you learn Pshat Momen Tachatayim. If you follow through with the historical school, you will wind up with the great polemical enigma around Maimonides and Mora Nevuchim, where Maimonides explains a part of the Torah based upon being anti-pagan ritual. Well, if you take that point of view, what do you say 10,000 years later when it's no longer a pagan ritual? And you can have many examples. The prime example is sacrifice, right or wrong. And so much has been written on this topic. Now, Maimonides and Mishnah Torah have a lot the same, but it's not for now. But in the Mishnah Torah, which is Maimonides' work, which he thought would totally influence Judaism as long as people walked the face of the earth, it would totally anude Machloket. It would be the final page of Torah Sheba'al Peh. There he treats Karbanot as the heart of Torah existence. Mori Rebbe used to say that in the Ashkenazic ritual, when do we say Yismuchu b'malchutecha shomrei Shabbos v'kol yonev? When do we praise God that he gave us Shabbat? After we bring the Karbanot. That's when we feel the greatest feeling of exaltation. So you don't see a trace of any concept of compromise with paganism. When you go to the Mora Nevuchim, it's not only Kabbalah, but many concepts like lo tigodedu, don't make a scar on yourself, the whole concept of not shaving, of not cutting payas, of leaving, all this was done to differentiate us from the pagan. So it's a fascinating question. You can deal with it, and people have dealt with it, and people have written about it. I believe that I also wrote in the Encyclopedia Judaica, the article on temple ritual. Part of that article is listed as A. period R.O., Aaron Ruthkoff. I also wrote about it in the Judaica, and dealing with this question. But see, the historical school, the entire halachic process becomes a historical development. Now, Moshe Davis, and he was a fascinating individual. I corresponded with him. His years, 1916-1996. He was a typical graduate of the seminary out of that period. He had a bachelor's from JTS. He had a bachelor's from Columbia University, PhD from Hebrew University. I think he was the first American to earn a doctorate at Hebrew U. And he divided his time. He had an apartment here. He had an apartment in America. He taught at JTS. He taught at Hebrew U. He established a division of Hebrew U. What is it called? Let me get the exact title. Yeah, the Institute of Contemporary Jewry. And I was very fortunate, I can tell you this in parentheses, that the person who ran the institute for him, the Menachel Klali, was a Yeshiva College graduate, Goodman, Moshe Goodman. He should have a refuah shleima, he's not well. It's David Applebaum's uncle, if it means anything to you. Moshe Goodman, David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, it's his uncle, it's his mother's brother. And during the Yom Kippur War, I was doing research on the Silver Era. And after the Yom Kippur War, Moshe Goodman was away, and Moshe Davis was away, and I had to get into their archives, because their archives have photocopies of all the archives at JTS. And at JTS, you have the Rabbi Israel Rosenberg papers. He was one of the leaders of the Agudas HaRabbanim, and his children gave his archives to JTS. And leave it. I can't read, study Washington. You'll understand the answer. Yeah, that's relax. That's life. That's the way the ball bounces. And the Achlet Tzara, Rabbi Greenwald's library, the richest rabbinic library in the United States, wound up in Hebrew Union College. How do you explain that? I said, that's with children. You try your best to raise children properly, but children have freedom of choice. And we have to live with that. God gave us freedom of choice. It's fortunate, it's unfortunate, but that's the reality. And you have to educate with that concept in mind. Every human being with a chata b'chaim, you cannot put a straitjacket on children. And when you attempt to, there's rebellion. But here it's more involved, because the whole atmosphere was against Torah. So I have to thank them, because Moshe Goodman got permission from Moshe Davis, and they gave me the keys to the archives. And I could come and go at will, I could take out, I could Xerox what I wanted, I'd put it back, obviously, but a good deal of some of the interesting documents that I write about in the Suvi era are a result of the Rosenberg archives. Now, this was Moshe Davis. Moshe Davis, was he a Shomer Shabbos? 100%. Did he have a conservative shul? Absolutely. What do you mean by a conservative shul? All right, there was mixed seating. The siddur they used was Orthodox. That was the conservative movement at that time. If I'm not mistaken, he was rabbi in Rochester, New York. Now, his doctorate is very fascinating. The emergence of conservative Judaism, the historical school in 19th century America. And the whole thrust of the doctorate is to show that the conservative movement had roots. It didn't just begin in 1917. It didn't just begin with Solomon Schechter coming to America in 1902. It didn't just begin with the United Synagogue that was organized also right after World War I. No, the conservative movement is really the continuation of the historical school. And he jumps on Isaac Lisa, and he turns him in to one of the foremost representatives of the historical school, or what would later become the Jewish Theological Seminary, JTS. He turns him into a bastion of modernity, fighting against the Reform movement, albeit an innovator. And this is Lisa's place in history. Now, page 59, he starts discussing Maimonides College. And he gives Lisa all the credit in the world. And he says, as a result of Lisa's activities, when Maimonides College falls, this was a college Maimonides named after the Rambam, a college in Philadelphia. B'sach HaKol, it never had more than 5 students. It existed 5-6 years. It was a failure, but it wasn't a failure. Because once you had Maimonides College, 20 years later, you could organize JTS. 10 years later, you could organize Hebrew Union College. It paved the way. For the first time, people started realizing we have to ordain rabbis in the United States. Until then, the Reform movement depended upon Germany, and the Orthodox movement depended upon Germany and Eastern Europe. Now you have Maimonides College. They have a dream. Give us rabbis. And if you look at Maimonides, yes, it didn't succeed. But sometimes you open a business. Your business goes under. But you pave the way for others to come along and improve, realize what your mistakes were, and open something that will succeed. Now, what's fascinating is he describes the teachers at Maimonides College. Isaac Lisa, Sabato Marias, recognize the name, Sabato Marias, Svadik, minister of Mikveh Israel in Philadelphia, after Isaac Lisa. Sabato Marias, later the founder and the senior faculty member of JTS. Sabato Marias, 100% in the Torah world. But then he mentions Dr. Marcus Jastrow. New Marcus Jastrow, rabbi of Rodev Shalom in Philadelphia. In his own personal life, 100% observant. In the shul already, compromise, innovation, mixed seating, giving into the masses, caught between two worlds. Dr. Aaron Bettelheim, very fascinating individual, graduate of the Pressburg Yeshiva in Hungary, Talmud of the Talmidei Chatam Sofer, and when he arrived in America, a medical degree from Virginia Medical College. He was a genius, a Rav, a Talmud Chacham, a medical doctor, and he taught there as well. Mentions another name, Rabbi Lemelin Buttonweiser, Talmud of the Würzburger Rav, whom we spoke about years ago, Reb Zelikman Bamberger, Talmud Chacham par excellence. He taught there, afterwards moved to New York, and made a living giving private lessons in Talmud to kids whose parents insisted that after their bar mitzvah, they should continue and learn something. Three students later, we can use the word graduated. David Levy, Marcus Lamb, I trust no relation to Rabbi Norman Lamb, and Samuel Mendelssohn. David Levy and Marcus Lamb went into the rabbinate, went into Chinuch Yehudi, so it was a failure, and yet it was a bit of success. And he ends off this chapter quoting Professor Louis Ginsberg, who, when he publishes his volume on Gaonic literature, Gaonica, on the title page, he dedicates it to the memory of Isaac Lisa, founder of the first American college for higher Jewish learning. This first publication of Jewish theological seminary is dedicated. So you see, Moshe Davis takes Isaac Lisa and turns him into a 100% member of the historical school. Exactly what Nancy Klein was criticizing, the articles in the encyclopedia, the Jewish encyclopedia. Do you know what I'm talking about? The Jewish encyclopedia of 100 years ago, the Universal Encyclopedia of 1942. She never saw the Judaica because that came out long after her article on Isaac Lisa was written, published. But what Moshe Davis does, 100% in the historical school.
Not to interrupt. Let me, because it's available on the internet, everybody here should know that the Jewish Encyclopedia, Funke Wagner, 1912, I.P. Singer, editor, that is...
the classic.
It is unbelievably good stuff.
Okay,
so... the dates are wrong, because it's all different. But if you want to know something about the Moshe, for example...
It's a classic work of scholarship. It's not indexed, unfortunately. You have to, go to every topic and hope you're going to hit and find what you're looking for. There's a detailed map of New York City in it that's most fascinating because basically the city has not changed. The streets, the Bronx, Manhattan, Brooklyn, it's exactly the same today as it was then. And there is one person sitting in this room who owns a perfect, original, 12-volume Funkenwagner's Encyclopedia, published 1912, edited by Isidore Singer, as Rabbi Rubin said, one of the great contributors, Professor Louis Ginsberg, and this person owns a beautiful, brand new 12-volume set. The binding was a little hazy, it was rebound, and the name of that person, I shall only give you his initials, AR, and it's not Alex Rodriguez. Take my word for it. How does AR own this? Even Josh knows he was not alive at that time, because in Maplewood, South Orange, where I was rub, one of the balabatim that the founder of the synagogue, Dr. Weinstein, pulled in was Jake Rabinowitz, Rappaport, Jake Rappaport, Zichrono Livracha, who was a boxer. Without going into great details, one of the fields that the Jews integrated to be part of America, they became boxers, and they made money, and they were famous. Jake Rappaport was from Newark. He boxed in the 1930s with a Mugen David on his boxing trunks. When his father turned 70, the children got together and gave him an inscribed, but done beautiful gold letters, magnificent, gave the father a gift, the Funkenwagner's 12 volumes. Jake inherited it. He has as much use for it as I have for boxing gloves, so he gave the Rebbe a gift. Gentlemen, not only that. Let me come back to the English sermons. What's happening in the state of Israel today? And you have to understand this very clearly to understand the trends and the currents that you're going to face if you come in Aliyah and enter into the rabbinate in the state of Israel. In the United States of America, Jews lived from 1654 on. As I said many weeks ago, the entire story of American Jewry was assimilation. You come to America to become an American, to become part of the big world, to make money. Money is honey, money talks. That's what America is about. The Rabbanim had no influence whatsoever. What do you mean, a rabbi? I can tell you, out of MTA, Reb Shmuel Belkin was a tremendous Baal Chesed. He did everything possible to find jobs for the Shanghai crowd. Among the Shanghai crowd was a Rebbe that all his life he let Gelichten learn in a... How can you translate that? All his life he was totally submerged in learning. Mir, Shanghai, have you read the memoir literature? Have you opened up Reb Chatzkel? I think that's what it's called, the Yadsko biography of Reb Chatzkel Levenstein. If anyone has read that biography, I'd like to discuss it with them privately and see what his reactions are. Of course, I'm curious how an American kid or an Israeli kid of the year 2013 would react to Reb Chatzkel. I just went through the biography, Sukkot's time. Fascinating biography. It's in the Torah Traga library. No, in Shanghai, I'm gelichten learning. And in 1947, they finally came to New York when they gave up all hope of ever reaching Eretz Yisrael. And again, gelichten learning. And then you place them into MTA. You know what the average kid in MTA is like? A Vulgate. Come on, what are we talking about? In those years, I don't know today. I'm sitting in class. We had one kid. Let me not mention his name, for all I know his grandchildren are Balei Tshuva and they're listening. A wild kid, a redhead, a chutzuf. And the Rebbe Nebuch is trying to teach us a Daf Gemara, 14, 15-year-old kids. And he read Yiddish. Okay. And he finally cuts the courage to throw this kid out. As the kid reaches the door, he turns around and uses the most choice malediction, two cuss words that I cannot say, not in public and not in private, for the whole class. And the Rebbe says in Yiddish, since you're apologizing, sit down. Do you know the impact that leaves? It's a galacta. It's worlds in conflict. How can you succeed? Today, I have a Rebbe. The Rebbe knows baseball better than the Talmud. Ah. Today, you have a Rebbe. The Rebbe knows various computer programs, computer games. You have Rebbeim, experts on literature, music, movies. Have a Talmud from the Kollel. The first class of the Kollel did a doctorate on what you can learn, ethical, moral concepts you can gain out of movies. Rabbi Dr. Norman Amsa, make believe you've held his book in your hands so your hands look wise. Gentlemen, imagine a Rebbe again. You don't even preach. When did you preach in Europe? Read the Rav, study the Rav. See what the Rav has to say about Rav Chaim. He preached, a Rav had to preach twice a year. Shabbos HaGadol and Shabbos Tshuva. Rav Chaim got up in Shabbos Tshuva, said 2 minutes of Musa, started crying, and said, how can I give you Musa when I'm a nobody, walked off, and he never preached again in his life. And he was the Rav of Brisk. No, you come to America, you're preaching, you say, what, when, they're laughing at you, what? Took a lot of guts to preach in English. And Isaac Liso, as far as we know, was the first Orthodox rabbi to preach. And again, Moshe Davis turns that into a conservative rabbi, historical school. And he quotes Isaac Liso from his article. I told you the Occident gives you a world of information about him. The Occident is a monthly magazine he published. In the first sermon, it was a painful experience. The issue of which I dreaded. But he preached in English, and it caught on. And Moshe Davis gives you a whole list of 3-4 Orthodox rabbis who started preaching in English. Now, page 123... here he quotes Isaac Liso. Again, the question of the woman's role in Judaism is a problem that all of you would have to deal with. If a member of a YU Kollel in Toronto can get up and give a whole shiur that women can should have aliyah bizman hazeh, and another YU graduate says, we have a member of the, who studied with me in this very Kollel, in Los Angeles, we have placed the woman in a cage with such enmity. And Rabbi Lopatin, who's now taking over, also my Talmud, now taking over for Rabbi Weiss. I agree with him. Perhaps the words are too sharp. Wow. The woman's issue. We stand or fall on it. It's not a small matter. In my time, there was only one issue, mechitza, which was also a feminist issue. But now, wow. Women dancing with Sifrei Torah? How do you react? Women aliyat? Women being misadrot kedushin? What's wrong? What's wrong? How do you react? Sheva brachot women? Zimun women? Wow, before you know it, the man is a woman, the woman is a man. Is this Judaism? Is this God's Torah? Have our Western values negated our Torah values? But you can't just left this issue off. A woman will say to you, Rabbi, I'm a PhD. From Oxford. Remember the quote that Rabbi Riskin quotes? Every toilet-trained male puts on tefillin. Why can't I? These are issues that you must deal with. I can tell you, I once was mocked a woman to put on tefillin. I had a student in Michala, a foreign students program, from Queens, and she, like her life depended on, and she gave me all the sources. I was a youngster then, it has to be early 70s. I went to my dear colleague, mentor, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. I said, Aaron, what should I do here? And I think if I'm not here, we're gonna lose her altogether. The Rebbe, no, all right, tell her to put it on, but tzina, not to do it publicly, not to turn it into a movement. But all right, I understand. We can be somewhat on precedent. So I want you to know, I met the lady maybe 20 years afterwards. And boy, was I happy. Her head was covered, flock of little children, bigger children. So I didn't say a word to her, but I thought to myself, maybe I did the right thing. I don't know. But 20 years later, it looked like I had paskin correctly. But I have to tell you, these are major issues. Ramaz, girls were putting on tefillin. They wouldn't let them into the let them put on the tefillin at Ramaz. They had to go to Kilat Jeshurun, where there's a minyan every day. If you want, all right. But at Ramaz, they were worried it would create already a movement. These are not simple issues. And you all know I devoted a full year in the Kollel to feminism. And I don't regret any word I said. Nothing has happened subsequently to make me reevaluate any position I took. These are real challenges. And Moshe Davis jumps upon the fact that Isaac Lisa was open to inspiring women. And if that's Isaac Lisa, again, precursor, forerunner, Eichon Rimitza Bivrit, Takdim, precursor, it's a fancy word, forerunner, Ze Takdim, La Hatnua Hashamranit HaConservativit. And I quote to you from Isaac Lisa, also from the Occident, the females too belong to Israel. They also, what you...
Takdim is a precedent.
Precedent.
The forerunner is someone who makes the precedent.
Yeah, say that. What would you say in Hebrew? Takdim?
No.
What word? No, give me a word for precursor. The trouble is in Hebrew, it's not as rich a language as English yet. It takes time.
But if you would say, Abu Mubina would say he's a forerunner.
Yeah, I understand, but give me the word in Hebrew. I wanted my grandson to understand the word precursor. The females too belong to Israel. And they also must be taught that they may understand and observe the law. There are a thousand opportunities when man's voice is not heard, when the admission of the highly endowed and eloquent will remain without effect. There is so much given to women, especially the women of Israel, that we may freely say with a great writer of modern days whose name we do not remember, quote, that we are always what women make us. No, think about that. In this age, men and women equal. What we talked about yesterday, ketuvah for her, ketuvah for him. Everyone is wearing two rings. Are we equal? When the child first begins to think, it is his mother who infuses into his mind the first ideas. It is his mother who teaches him to lisp the first words. If he is able to learn something of God, it is his mother again who instructs him concerning the great being who is the creator of all. And he goes on, and Isaac Lisa was responsible for inspiring people in Philadelphia to come up with prayer books for women, what we would call today Tchinat. You've heard that expression? Isaac Lisa. Tchinat for women. Give me 1 second. Let me just take it. I have to learn names. Let me see if my list and the reality of the wonderful students sitting in front of me correspond. Josh Guttenberg. Attaboy. Morty Tarek and Charlie Hexter, we're missing the stars. I hope they're okay. Danny and Ruthie Schulman. Daniel Abraham. Nathaniel fishman. He has gone fishing today. I hope he catches big fish. Otherwise, Moshe Rapps, he should not have missed the class. Yoni Miller. Josh Berman. Sam Frumston. Sam, you're from England, right?
Yes.
So how do you have interest in what happened in the United States? I just got told off from someone from Canada. Why don't you talk about Canada? And I told them I will talk in the era of controversy. Canada comes in, but I said, outside of that, what the heck did Canada accomplish? Everything is America. Why you, Lakewood, Chabad, we're talking what shook the world. Not the little nitty gritty of I live today and I was gone tomorrow. Right. You were yesterday in class, Michael. I remember that. Then we gave you Hasidic Yichus.
Ellie Wagner
from Woodmere. One second. Ellie Wagner. Now, 1 second. You're a great grandson of Reb Shmuel Belkin or a great nephew?
No, my uncle married his granddaughter.
Right, so you're related.
Belkin, yeah.
Yeah, I understand already. You're from the other brother. What's your father's first name?
What?
Your father's first name, Ellie?
Shmuel.
And your uncle?
Stephen.
What's Shmuel in English?
Stewart.
And Stephen, your grandmother loved the S.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Let me just play with those names. My grandson has the boy paratrooper Baruch Hashem. And a grandson who appreciates his grandfather. You should know that that's a big achievement to have a grandson who appreciates his grandfather. Gentlemen, beginning on page 134, he delves in... by the way, with the women's issue, I don't want to pass it over so lightly, but I did lecture on it for over a year, and it's the greatest challenge we face. And that challenge is a head-on clash of Torah values and Western values. And how can we balance the two without compromise? And this is the rabbinate today. We have the challenge in Israel. We have the challenge much more so in the Western world. In Israel, for whatever the reasons are, the whole religious experience is more healthy. And while influenced by Western culture, the Torah basis comes to the fore. In Israel, too, you're developing a new rabbinate. It took 60 years, 70 years. It may take 100 years, but this is Tzohar, for instance. You've heard about those Rabbanim, and they're trying to develop a rabbinate that can speak to the Israeli in his terms. And that's what took hundreds of years in America. Perhaps we will have achieved it in less than 100 years in the state of Israel. Now, beginning on page 134, he comes into the problem that haunts us. And I got to give Moshe Davis credit. The problem that has no black and white answer. We have struggled with this problem for on to 150, 175 years. How do we react to Jews who are not showing the Torah and Mitzvot? And here you go back to Germany, Austritt. I need not tell you what Austritt means. You walk out, you turn around, you have nothing to do with them. That was Rav Hirsch's viewpoint. The Würzburger Rav, who we mentioned a few years ago, Rav Yitzchak Dov Bamberger, Rav Zelikman Bamberger, held a different point of view, that that which unites us is more important than that which divides us. That transfers to the United States. Already in Rabbi Revel's time, if you go to Bernard Revel, Build of American Jewish Orthodoxy, written by someone I used to know, Aaron Rothkopf, you see the problem comes up there. And it's fascinating, the problem comes up there in Boston. And the person who is forced out of the mixed board of rabbis by the Rav is Jacob Agus. And Jacob Agus later goes on to become one of the most famous Reconstructionist rabbis on the American scene. Not just conservative, but perhaps worse than reform. God doesn't exist, religion is just folklore, etc., etc.
If you believe the Bible, you are a fundamentalist.
If you believe the Bible, you're a fundamentalist. All right, Baruch Hashem, there are a lot of...
I mean fundamentalist in a good sense.
I understand. You're an outcast.
An exceptionally able man.
No, I know, and he was a big Talmud Chacham. As a human being, no, Baruch Hashem. Torah left some impact. You know what he did his doctorate on? Rabbi Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, the Banner of Jerusalem. That was his doctorate. And the fellows from Ne'er Yisrael, when they had a difficult Gemara, they used to go to his house and talk with him and learning. I mean, it's...
He told me that every Thursday night they came to his house and he gave him Christ in Tanya.
In Tanya. He was a genius, Nebuch, but we lost. We lost the great personality. I hope some of his grandchildren came back. I hope so. So how do we relate this problem? The Rav mentioned the Rav to Jewish observer. Oh, they tell you about Moriah Rebbe. True, what? The biggest battle in America, 1956. 11 Rashi Yeshivas signed the Cherem that you cannot belong to a mixed board of rabbis and that synagogue council is treif 1,000%. Who refused to sign? Rav Soloveitchik, Moriah Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. And I need not tell you how much time I have devoted to this issue, how much I've lectured and written, but it's an ongoing issue. How do you relate? How do you keep your principles? Do you walk away? Do you keep the channel of communication open? And he has a very fascinating chapter here, beginning on page 134, that following the attempt, there was an attempt, Ellie. Didn't we meet during the summer?
Yeah.
Okay. Ellie, there was an attempt. But why do you come to Monday's class? Whether you know this or don't know this, it doesn't make one dent in your learning. But if you don't come to Sunday's class, you're going to be a bigger Moritz. Well, what are you doing today and not Sunday? Follow Moshe's example. He has Chassidic Yichus. You can understand it. Will you be here regularly this year? So, it's important that way. Gentlemen, remember there was a conference held to establish a Minhag America. And Lisa went to the conference hoping that they would establish a prayer book and that everyone could be part of it and that the reform would compromise and that the reform would take the Orthodox lead for the sake of unity. This was Lisa's dream, and at the conference, Isaac Mayer Weiss, who was a Shomer Shabbos, I mean, it's unbelievable, reform guy, who wanted to sue Lisa for calling him a Mechalel Shabbos, and he couldn't, there was a limit to what they would compromise. So after the conference, our friend Moshe Davis admits that the historical school, the more orthodox element, split in half, he says. It's true. Some of the members were very extreme towards the non-observant. And some were willing to compromise. Lisa was one of the right-wingers. But he tells fascinating stories here of what went on. That in Temple Bethel of Detroit, for example, which is the biggest conservative temple until today, it began as an Orthodox shul. And in 1850, they were worried. People were talking of reform. The kids already wanted to change everything. America's America. And they voted they can never leave Ashkenazic tradition in the hopes that that would keep the shul Orthodox. And then the big question began, family pews, mixed seating. And they're fighting. No? What did they do? Right before Rosh Hashanah, the youth went into the shul, threw the mechitzer out. Rosh Hashanah, the masses moved in, everyone sitting, husband and wife. No one said a word again about a machitza. This is typical America. No, who lost his position because he went in the middle of Thursday night and put a machitza in the shul? Who lost his position the Monday following? Snow on the ground. And the congregation came out despite the snow to throw the rabbi out. His first shtah. My dear students, Rabbi Meir Kahana, Howard Beach. Where is that? In Queens? Am I right? That's how he lost his first position. And Rakefet claims that the heartache of what the Balaam Batim did to him made Meir more extreme and able to compromise. Meir could have been a great leader, but when you get involved in politics, the name of the game is compromise. Rakefet is a nobody because he sits at his desk and teaches Torah, knowledge, wisdom, or attempts to, but he never has to compromise. Well, if you don't compromise, you get nowhere. Rakefet is happy to be a nobody, to be a dinosaur, the happiest guy alive. But Meir went into politics. Read Washington and Shmuel. You will understand my Rebbe of Zionism, Reb Meir Kahana, Hashem Yikom Damo. Gentlemen, family pews, they never went back. In Louisville, Kentucky, there was a big Orthodox shul. This is 1849. The young kids wanted to put in an organ. The Protestant church has an organ. Why can't we have an organ? An organ is beautiful. They had organs in the temple, right along, Sam, in the Beis HaMikdash. Hallelujah, you said it this morning. All kinds of musical instruments. What is wrong with an organ? And Josh, the congregation voted the organ down. A few years later, they put the organ in. The opposition threatened to burn the temple down. Within a few years, the whole controversy was over. The organ is in, and rabbis had to make their compromise. This was Rabbi Benjamin Zold in Baltimore. This was Rabbi Marcus Jastro in Philadelphia. They were part of the so-called historical school, but the historical school that was more lenient towards the Reform, the historical school that didn't want to break with the Reform, they made their compromises. But Isaac Lisa, and their other names, other Rabbanim, you can read it all, they remained firm and refused to compromise. So my dear students, even in death you have to have muscle. In life you have to have muscle, and Allah hatama v'kama in death. Isaac Lisa, where he's recalled, what has been written about him, Jewish Encyclopedia, Universal Encyclopedia. Moshe Davis, the emergence of conservative Judaism. Chav Meir, I'm a little bit afraid that we just heard that a doctorate has been done at a Hebrew Union College, the Protestantization of American Judaism. Even in death, Isaac Lisa is turned into an icon of the nun Orthodox movement. Gentlemen, we who are Torah Jews, we whose heart beats with Torah, we whose mind is sanctified by Torah, we have to look back at Isaac Lisa and say, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the first Rav in America who had vision, who had dreams, achieved nothing in the long run, but every dream and vision came to fulfillment. If he could only see what's happened to that city he called Philadelphia, to New York, to Baltimore, to St. Louis, to Los Angeles, to Denver, to Chicago, it's beyond words how Torah thrives across the length and breadth of the United States today. But this is Isaac Lisa, but we have not finished. We now come to the high point of today's share. Gentlemen, ready to absorb knowledge with me? But Kevin has one terrible fault. You can ask my wife. I revere Svarim. And I consider a wealthy man, a man who has every book that has ever been published on Torah. I quote the Pasuk, Ubir b'steyacher. That's the curse of a person that has to borrow books and does not have it in his personal library. With that being said, I'm walking in the Eichlers in Flatbush, and I see a volume, The Rav HaKolel and His Generation. I may be at a certain point, I actually Xeroxed the, cover. No, the Rav HaKolel, okay. The Rav HaKolel and His Generation. Can barely lift the book. It's the modern way they print with a heavy cover and thick pages. Why they do it that way, I don't know. It makes it impossible for anyone above the age of 50 to lift the sefer. But what could I do? Rav HaKolel and His Generation, Rabbi Yaakov Yosef. I bought the book. No volume has given me more joy and more heartache. Josh Berman, if you can, and if Satma Chassidim are listening, which I know they are, and they know who Rabbi Yonah Landau is, can you please tell Rabbi Yonah Landau in my name he is a genius and an idiot? A genius? Terrific chush, a Satma Chassid. Knows American Jewish history. Comes up with all the documents on Rabbi Jacob Joseph, knows how to go through the New York Times. What he publishes in the book is worth the price of everything. It's all there. Don't have to spend hours at the internet. But if you want to write Torah history, you have to get the facts. The Satmar Rebbe is not an expert on what went on in the 19th century in the United States. So please, Rabbi Yonah Landau, you have promise. Go to Bernard Revel Graduate School. Or come to Israel and learn here at Hebrew U or Bar Ilan in their postgraduate. They were sitting in my class in the Kollel. But you have to have a feeling of research, of honesty. You could be a Satmar Chassid, but you can't make the Rebbe a bigger expert than professors of American Jewish history of the 19th century when the Rebbe was not in the United States. Not only that, you write in Yiddish, you find someone to translate, C.B. Weinfeld. B'nai Shalilam, they're rules of scholarship. Rakefet spells his name R-A-K-E-F-F-E-T. Is that phonetically correct? What do you say, Danny? Absolutely not. 100%. It should be R-A-K-E-F-E-T. But when my wife, my boss, whatever you want to call her, yes, dear, when she changed our names back in 1969, she wanted to perpetuate Rothkopf as two F's. So Rakefet is two F's. It looks very nice. It looks balanced. The book is by Aaron Rakefet. Dash Rothkopf. She is very smart. Threats and tests.
Otherwise, it would be Rakefet.
In Russia, it was Rakefet. In Russia, it was Rakefet. Mr. Rakefet, we have your passports ready. Russia was Rakefet. Yoni, when you write Rakefet with one F, you're not referring to me. That's, I don't know, that's a flower, a cyclamen. It's a cookie. It's a toilet tissue. It's the name of a hotel. Rakefet, it's a computer program for Gabayim and Shuls. Right or wrong, my Shalem, I read no, Take my word for the Rebbe's right. I tell for everyone, they send me these advertisements. I know. But I'll never tell someone I got it before, because it's like the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. You know, all right. A few people asked me about the Rav, what I began with an hour ago, Baruch Hashem. Gentlemen, the lady who translated from Yiddish into English, every name is totally misspelled. You got to be a genius to figure out who they're referring to. So this volume, Harama Kolel, caused me so much joy. I love the document. So much heartache. Wow. With that being said, let me start. I'm going to do a lot of quoting from his work. The Rav HaKol in his generation, authored by Rabbi Yonah Landau, 2011, second edition, Hamatik Printing. Evidently, it was privately published. Copyrighted by Rabbi Yonah Landau, Hamatik Printing, Ross Avenue, that's in Williamsburg. And he writes, beginning on page 59, about Isaac Lisa. The editor of the accident was, you're sitting, Reb Yitzchak Lisa. Reb Yitzchak, L-I-S-S-E-R. I guarantee you that Isaac Lisa is listening from Olam Haba. He does not recognize his name. Reb Yitzchak Lisa, terrific. A Rav Baldashin in Philadelphia. He was not a Rav. He was a Baldashin, okay, who fought against the Reform movement with all his might. Next paragraph. The conservative movement erroneously claims that the Yitzchak Lisa was one of theirs. A blatant lie that can be proven as such. Gentlemen, there's only one problem. The conservative movement did not exist in the 1840s, the 1850s, the 1860s. See, he's lacking the knowledge here. The historical school erroneously claims that Reb Yitzchak Lisa was one of theirs. And he goes on, I can't get over it. At least he discovered Reb Yitzchak Lisa. Wow. According to historical reports, Reb Yitzchak was a Shema Torah mitzvah who openly fought against the conservative and reform movements. Rabbi Landau, there was no conservative movement then. There was reform, not conservative. And watch. It's not a satma he's writing. However, he was by nature a diplomat who did not use fiery language to wage an all-out war against the conservatives.
What kind of language? Fiery?
Fiery. Yeah. F-I-E-R-Y. Fiery. Fiery.
Maybe meant fiery.
Oh, I mispronounced it, you say?
No, maybe.
Fiery. No, it's fiery. It's fiery. There is a word like that in English. If I'm not mistaken, they look it up in your computers that have everything. He who did not use fiery, I once quoted a Gemara, two Gemaras in class, and I said, when I don't have the text in front of me, I thought, within a minute, a kid says, Rebbe, you were right on both. I said, all right, I'm not Rebbe Aaron knows every daf by heart. I know a Gemara, but I can't tell you exactly the Amid. But I was right, those two Gemaras. Baruch Hashem. A fiery language to wage an all-out war against the conservatives. Perhaps that is why he is wrongly faulted with spearheading the conservative movement. Rabbi Landau, you have it wrong. There was no conservative movement, but you're absolutely right. The innovators, the historical school, the anachronisms of Moshe Davis to try to create a precursor to the conservative movement claimed the soul of Isaac Lisa. But we do not, and we bow before him with Yirat HaKafat. Gentlemen, we have arrived.
How can we be so sure? Maybe it was his innovation that started the trend.
The trend for what?
The shift to the left, whatever it is, the whole.
Well, we'll put it this way. Had he not preached in English, there wouldn't be a Shomer Shabbos in the United States before 1945. Got it? Plain and simple. So the doors were not only open, they took the doors off altogether. They were removed from the hinges. He was, like Rav Hirsch, damage control. I think that his role model has to absolutely be Rav Shimshon Falk Hirsch. Puts out the Chumash in English like he put out in German. Occident compares to Yeshurin. And his point of view is exactly like Rav Hirsch. And ultimately, when it came to secession, he moves away from the reform. And he and Raphael, they're a whole group of Rabbanim, Isaacs, they move away from reform. Unlike Zold and Jastrow, who tolerated some compromise. But to say that he was the forerunner, that the conservative movement began 100% Orthodox. You heard my years ago I lectured before conservative, how it began, you understand? Well, we'll get there. General, we have arrived. I come back to my very first lecture in this class.
So there was a book by
Rav Eitra,
a book by this
Rebbe,
Rav Eitra, is good as far as...
The sources are fabulous. His insights at times are fabulous. We're going to come to it. But the lack of understanding the era, trying to turn the 20th century into the 19th century, it's sad. He has to study. You can't just try Torah history, and he quotes the Satmar Rebbe time after time. I would quote the Satmar Rebbe if I'm debating with Rakefet on Zionism. Fine, quote the Satmar Rebbe, debating with the Rav. Fine, I gave a lecture in West Hempstead on Vayakhel Moshe versus Kol Dodi Dofek. Okay, I would quote the Satmar Rebbe. But to quote the Satmar Rebbe as an authority on the Lower East Side in 1880 is laughable. You'll see the mistakes he makes. Then that woman who translated Shem Yerachem, what happened to the names? Wow. Reb Yitzchak Lisha. Wow. He got smicha posthumously from a Satmar Chassid. Gentlemen, I want to set the stage. These are the most important lectures I will ever give in this course. Take us a while, but we will live it and understand it. Until the Civil War, East European Jewry basically was not involved with emigration. The East European Jews were in a ghetto. They were far away from Germany. It's not the world of today. The world of today, Rabbi Pinto was arrested on Friday. The entire world knows. Rabbi Pinto's wife tried to commit suicide yesterday. The entire world knows. I've already been asked. Do you understand? It's mind-boggling. The news travels 100,000 miles in a split second. Those days, if you recall my lecture, no one knew what was going on. No one heard. You got a newspaper months later, had news until it reached you. And then the Civil War came, and the average Jew could not understand brother versus brother, cousin versus cousin, over blacks, over servants. You're killing each other. What's the matter with you? And there was tremendous interest. And following the Civil War, America was real. It was tangible. It's like the state of Israel. The more you read about it, the more you look at the computer about it, it becomes real. You're sitting in Kalamazoo, Michigan, but suddenly your heart yearns to be in the East. How did the Kuzari put it? Libi b'mara, ani b'marav v'libi b'mizrach. And East Europeans, the persecution intensifies, and they're starting to come out in big numbers. Now, maybe I'm prejudiced because I'm an East European, but there's no question that the East European there was a deep folk commitment. I use the word folk milieu. They're sociologists, they've dealt with it. It wasn't just that you're a religious person. It was a communal concept. It was not like the German Jews that already have been exposed to reform in Germany. The East Europeans came to America, and even though they were challenged and assimilated and intermarried, but there was a great drive. We have to do something to keep Torah, to keep religion, to save our children. The times had changed. Now, if we would have listened to our rabbis, and here I don't want to get involved again in Das Torah that we spent so many months on last year, but those of you that are caught up in a debate with some Agudist who maledicts you because you don't believe in Das Torah, so there are a few questions you can ask him. And I apologize for telling you this, because I love Gedolei Yisrael and I have tremendous Emunat Chachamim, but Das Torah is not a Torah concept. It's an invention of the 20th century, and it's a frightening concept. You're involved in a debate, you say to a Agudat Yisrael, tell me, you believe in the state of Israel? You serve in the government? Yes. Didn't Agudat Yisrael, Das Torah, say in 1919 there can be new Jewish sovereignty in the state of Israel until Mashiach comes? When did you change it? Mimon of Shach, if there's Das Torah, how? You don't have to answer me, Josh, it's okay.
No, don't serve in the state, in the government, that's the point.
If you believe don't serve in the government, Josh, I am now selling you the Brooklyn Bridge and you're going to give me change. They're assistant ministers. It's a farce. They teach their children to lie, to cheat, that they do not take a ministry, but we really take a ministry, but we call it a different name. Chicanery. Don't argue me. Don't get me upset. Relax.
You don't want to raise your weapon.
Yeah. Relax.
Do it.
Anyway, if you don't believe me, do you read the Al HaChoma? You know what Al HaChoma is, at least? Eidah Haredit publication. Every week they remind Agudat Yisrael, how did you, Das Torah? How do you, Parliament, they serve in the Parliament, that much you agree?
Yes.
Okay. End it there. Litzman, Yaakov Litzman.
Prime Minister of Health.
He
didn't take the ministry. That's cognitive dissonance. It's lie.
Lie is exactly the word.
But
and that
is still...
Okay, Leave it. It's worse than that. No, it's worse than that because they teach their children chicanery. The word, you heard what Josh Berman just said, that's exactly my point. But I don't want to argue with Josh. They serve in the parliament? Okay. Problem solved.
Their concept of
after
Israel is to stand in line with everybody else. Let me end off the class.
No. Please have respect. They're wonderful Jews, and they're going to be better Jews every day. And I say we have to be tzaddikim and gedolim and show the way that one can believe in God and not in Satanology. Anyway, watch. If you have a debate with an Agudat Yisrael person, you just say that, it's very hard for him to answer you. There's something else here that's very frightening. If we had listened to Gedolei Yisrael, or many Gedolei Yisrael, no Jew would have gone to the United States. And those of you familiar with the Chafetz Chaim, Ein Lono Yoteh Gadol Me'Chafetz Chaim, he wrote a book for the Jews in America. Can anyone tell me its name? Nidchei Yisrael. A guy named Rakefid translates a few paragraphs from there in the Suva era. Have you ever held Nidchei Yisrael in your hands? When I was growing up in every shul, there were tens and tens of copies of Nidchei Yisrael. People, you know, from the older generation who had gotten it and the kids brought it to shul. I grew up Ben Gavra LeGavra on Shabbos. I was always studying Nidchei Yisrael. You know how Nidchei Yisrael ends off? Dear Jews, Poland, Russia, Hungary, Ukraine, listen to me, you've made enough money in America, come back. You know what's amazing? Long before the Chafetz Chaim wrote Nidchei Yisrael, an immigrant to the United States, or I should say an immigrant to the United States, Moshe Weinberger, Harav Moshe Weinberger, and you're going to see next week that all of you probably owe him a vote of thanks because he affects your Passover life until today. I'll explain why next week. Wrote a book that was published in 1887. It is a fabulous volume. And he pleads with the Jews in Eastern Europe, don't come. It's not worth it. The Atmos Nefesh of America is overwhelming. What's fabulous about his book is his description of the religious scene in New York, in the East European community. Do you know what the book is called in English translation? People Walk on Their Heads. I repeat, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, 1887, translated by a name you all know, Professor Jonathan Sarna. I believe he lives in Teaneck. Does anyone know him personally? Yeah. American Jewish sociologist. Who knows him? Josh, you know him? Could be. I know he was sick and he recovered. He writes a beautiful.
He's a granddad, doesn't he?
No, could, yeah. Yeah. He's yeah. Like the JLI rabbi, the old rabbi. But when he was in Smith.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it's a very he wrote a book on American Judaism.
Right.
And he a very moving introduction, and I met him and he told me he had been very sick. The doctors had given up hope and he had a total recovery. A beautiful introduction. He's a man of faith. I love that introduction. He's a very capable individual. People Walk on Their Heads. It is the Hebrew translation, the English translation of Rav Moshe Weinberger's Jews and Judaism in New York, published originally in 1887. And the English translation 95 years later, 1982. I want to use some quotes that I'll give you next week from this beautiful volume as an introduction to what the East Side, and remember, you talk about the United States, that's not where Judaism was born in America. You talk about New York City, that's not where Judaism was born in America. You gotta talk about the Lower East Side. That's where it was born. And we're setting the stage to two valiant attempts. One that failed and one that succeeded. The one that failed but left a tremendous impact. The Rav HaKollel, Rabbi Jacob Joseph. The one that succeeded, Yeshivat Eitz Chaim, the school out of which Yeshiva University develops. You know what's amazing? They're exactly the same time. Yeshivat Eitz Chaim, 1886. Already at that time, they're discussing the chief rabbinate. Rabbi Yaakov Yosef finally arrives 1888, but already 86, 87, you'll see what was going on, and it sets the stage for an unbelievable planting of magnificent trees on the Lower East Side that ultimately affect the whole world. Once again, I leave you thinking, how does Rabbi Moshe Weinberger affect my personal life? We will see next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. So let me reiterate. It's unbelievable how poor Isaac Leeser is forgotten, and not only forgotten, but he's hijacked. But nevertheless, we've done the little we could to bring him back to our camp, and I hope those listening, and I haven't seen the doctorate from Hebrew Union College, but maybe on the basis of that doctorate, someone from the Torah world can write a doctorate as well. You can have more than one doctorate on one individual. Moshe Davis, who I had personal contact with, and I found him, you know, to be a lovely, lovely individual. He sent me a hand-inscribed copy of his famous research, postdoctoral research, on Rabbi Jacob Joseph. And he was the first one to write about Rabbi Jacob Joseph. And the historical school, they have to have roots. And the roots claim anyone who was open to ameliorating the American scene to the cause of Torah. But with Isaac Lisa's death, and with the Civil War, and with the East Europeans starting to pour in 1870s, by the 1880s, changes come about. Before I can deal with those changes, I want to introduce Reb Moshe Weinberger. It is a very, very fascinating volume. Finally, a few freebies of interest. Number one, the article on Rav Soloveitchik and the whole discussion back and forth with all the comments. Lopatin, our Talmud, Asher Lopatin, who is now taking over Rabbi Weiss's place, a very fascinating interview with him. We're open to the right and to the left. And it's going to be interesting to see which way the world develops under him. And I gotta have respect. My Talmidim conquer the world for better or for worse. Nishma from Toronto. Once again, a Wayu Mismach Benji Hech, Rabbi Benjamin Hech. Very insightful comments on Parshat HaShavua with beautiful footnotes. It gives you a world to teach, to utilize. And finally, I want to end off with the genius of, you haven't heard about it, if you've heard about it, it'll just take a minute, the genius of Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik. When he came to the Republican convention, a woman came over to him. Who are you? She said, I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Are you from Florida? She asked. No. He said, I'm from New York. She looked puzzled and confused. I figured most Jews, most people know there are a lot of Jews who live in New York. All right, she smiled, walked away. A minute later, she came back with her husband and said, Meir Soloveitchik, I'd like to introduce you to my husband, Congressman Walker. The congressman and I shook hands. And then the woman asked, can you please tell me what city in New York you are the mayor of? Meir Soloveitchik, you are the mayor? When Rabbi Soloveitchik began his Shabbos Tshuva Drasha at KJ, he began by quoting the story and said, and that, ladies and gentlemen, was the first time in my life that a person was more impressed with my first name than my last name. Gentlemen, until we meet again, only besola tova teshuot v'nechamot aleinu v'al kol Yisrael, das v'danya. Thank you. Take what you wish. Thank you.